Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Phineas Club. Welcome back to the Tales of Fatherhood. This is the third such episode that we have done. Well, that we're doing. We're doing the third one. The second one was before, and the first one before that. We'll talk about it. My name is Patrick Beja. We're going to be talking about children, small children, and the challenges that they bring, and maybe a little bit about older children as well. Bruce is here with me because he also has children like me. How's it going, Bruce? Are you surviving that state of being a dad?
As we were discussing earlier, kids are currently on holiday, so you may hear them in the background. I'm surviving. Yeah. The job has changed. The job description's changed, but it's still a challenge.
Yeah, that's what people keep telling me. So usually on this show, this is the Phineas Club. What we usually do is that we get people from different parts of the country, the different countries, the big world country that we all live on. And we get to talk about the news and get their opinions and views on some of the different things that have been happening in the world. We often do specials, though, where we focus on one topic. And sometimes we do multiple, you know, episodes on a specific topic to see how it evolves. It's happened for the now world famous Brexit saga, where we've been following the Brexit for, I guess, 3 years, something like that. Every 2 months we come back and we talk about it. Bruce is part of that one, much to his dismay. And we are now turning this, I guess, when you do three episodes, it's a series as well, for fatherhood and to have an avenue to talk about how we feel about children, about our children, how it works out for us having little monsters running around all the time. The first one we did was a few months, I would say, it was 8 months after my first child was born. That was in September 2018, all the way back in September. And the second one was earlier this year, actually, before my daughter was born in 2021. So in February 2021. And so first one was shell shock for me, I guess, still trying to make sense of what had happened and how my life had been upended. And the second one in February, you can, you know, go search for Tales of Fatherhood episode if you want. It's 113 and 166 for the first two. The second one was, when I started getting a grip on the situation. My son was 3 years old at that point, and my daughter was about to be born, a couple of months before my daughter was born. We had on those two, Martin from Japan at some point. Turkey also joined us for the second episode. Today, though, it's just Bruce and myself, and I guess we're kicking it into another gear because we have multiple children. Turkey and Martin, as far as I know, still only have one. So they're like, they're not part of our club of the real hardcore fathers. But no, I mean, obviously they they will be back on the Tales of Fatherhood series at some point, I'm sure, before they even have two children. That's not a requirement. One is enough. And that applies to so many things.
We are the one stupid enough to not have got a vasectomy after the first.
Oh, it's coming for me. Better believe that there won't be a third one. Just a quick mention that this show is supported by its patrons at patreon.com/thePhidias Club. And I am forever thankful that those wonderful people allow me to make a living out of talking about my children on the internet. I do other things too. But this is a true, like a real blessing. Bit like fatherhood, one might say. I'm going to clarify the fact that I'm happy to be a dad in just a minute, but first, I'm really happy to have patrons that support this show, and I would like to thank each and every one of them for their hard-earned cash that they decide to throw my way. So thank you very much to all of you, and I love you dearly. Again, kind of like my children. I feel, Bruce, before we even get into this, like, I should clarify that I love my children, because I don't know if that sounds familiar, but talking about them, I think people might get the sense that I actually don't. And I think it's a good starting point to explain. They are adorable. They're lovely. I love them dearly. I could not imagine life without them. They're, you know, the most important thing in my life, along with their mother. And that kind of goes without saying. Do you get a feeling of why, you know, familiar that? Feeling?
Can I just, yes. I think I said that on an episode previously, and I'll mirror that, sentiment exactly now. I mean, not your, of course I like your children, I've never met them, but I mean, for my children, I'm sure your children are wonderful, although I still maintain my kids were cuter than yours when they were younger, but
it's okay, everyone's entitled to their wrong opinion, it's fine. I'm sure we've said the exact same things, you know, twice
I'm already. Sure we have. I Patrick, I forget what I've said 3 minutes ago, so this is after the second one, you understand why now.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, that's, I think, where I want to start. The fact that, so there are a couple of things, and I think maybe I mentioned this in the previous episodes, but I'm not, you know, I'm sure some people have not heard the previous ones, and maybe some people have forgotten, as you do, and as I do, have forgotten what happened yesterday. So, you know, let alone an podcast from months ago or years ago. It is kind of crazy that you can hold in your heart two sentiments which are so opposed and yet so true at the same time. I mourn my life from before, and I dread a lot of my daily life because it's really hard to take care of children. And we'll talk about this more in a second, but it is like it is actively making my life less enjoyable. And that might sound harsh, but we've said harsh things on the show about children before, so I feel, you know, like this is something that people rarely talk about, but it is true, at least for some of us. It is making you miserable, especially when they're very young, I believe. Maybe you'll tell me, you know, I'm being naive in thinking it will get better, but especially when they're very young and when there's two of them, it eats up your life completely. And that is not like just a, oh, you don't have time anymore, but like you don't have time for yourself anymore, and you aren't yourself anymore. And that can be, at least for me it is, I won't speak for everyone, it's really hard. It's really hard to find yourself in a situation where you're beholden to things that you can't control. And depending on whether your children are quote unquote easy or hard, it might be really, really difficult. And at the same time, you have this infinite adoration for the cause of your, you know, despair. And you are so happy that they're a part of your life, and they it's like beyond your control as well. You're you know, biology, evolution, you love your children, otherwise we wouldn't be here, but you are completely in love with those little creatures, and everything they do is adorable. And those two feelings of dread and love are absolutely existing at the same time in your heart and in your mind. And it's weird, but it's definitely, it both are very strong. And so it's a bit strange, but yeah. Does it get better or?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you.
It changes. We can stop the show. I think you do get more time to yourself. I think you probably realize that with your first. Mm-hmm. I'm actually writing this down. Infinite adoration for the cause of your despair. I think that's one of the best explanations I've heard in a long time for being a parent.
I'll work it into the title somehow.
Yes, things change, and I'm telling you exactly what I've been told. And I also think while we're talking about things improving, one of the things that I've come to realize over the past 2 years, well, 18 months or however long COVID's been, and since I've been forced to work at home, and I think this is something that you would have uniquely have felt before, is working at home constantly, which I am doing now and have done for the past year, makes it a little more difficult because you don't get that time away. You don't get that time to yourself. I actually used to look forward to the drive into work, being at work, being around adults and other people. And it's harder.
No, you don't get that.
And I don't think I don't know what your arrangements are either, but I think your way of life would mean that you're involved almost constantly. And
yeah.
And it's difficult.
Well, for me, it's always COVID. COVID all the time. I'm just, you know, I live in COVID world. Which is why, you know, it's not so different for me. It hasn't been so different for the past 2 years. Although having him at home all the time as well, that was special.
Yeah. it's amazing when you find yourself looking forward to the last time you ever have to wipe their butts.
I'm almost there, I think. Almost for one of them.
Almost there. It depends. You know, different children at different rates. But when you've got both of them out of that stage, you feel like there's a sense of freedom that you haven't had for years.
That's the thing. Go ahead.
It sounds so stupid when I say it, but I remember that being a big turning point for me. It's like, oh, wow. I don't have to be responsible for shits anymore.
It is a big thing. It is a big moment. And I think, I'm taking off my sweater. It's too warm. I think there are two main, you know, areas that I want to cover. And that is actually one of them, kind of related to one of them. How much more difficult it is to have two children than one. Mm-hmm. And the easy versus difficult child conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The first part, I think, is... So I'll sum it up that way. Mm-hmm. Before my daughter was born, I thought it was really hard to have one child. And now I look back on those times very fondly, thinking, I wish I could go back there, meaning, you know, time-wise. I wish I had as much time as I did back then. And I had so much free time. It was so easy to take care of my son. And now when we have, you know, with my wife, one of them, if we have both of them in the house and we're both there, or one of us is there, we're responsible for both. Obviously, it's very hard. But if one is away with one child and we only have one kid to take care of, so easy. It's mm-hmm. so easy. And my God, it is definitely much more time consuming to have two. It's not like twice as much. It's, or maybe factually it is, but it feels like it's 10 times as much. I still have had time to do things when I had one child. Now I don't have time to exist, kind of. Or, you know, literally, I work all day, of course, as most people do. And my time to do something that isn't work or children is between 8 and 10 p.m. most days. And that's it. And that includes, like, food. And I think that's something everyone knows. Oh, you know, having small children is the busiest time of your life. And you kind of mention it in society as a inconsequential truth. And just like having one kid changes your view on all of this shit. So I'm going to curse on this episode. I have to, like, let out some frustration. Just a little bit. Just like having one child changes your perception of that, having two makes you understand, holy crap, that it is true. Like, it is the time of your life when you will have the least, you will be the busiest, you'll have the least amount of not just free time, but free headspace. You don't have the intellectual bandwidth to do anything. I can tell you, I have to, like, force myself to do podcasts every week. Otherwise, I don't eat. If I didn't need it to eat, I would just, like, be staring at my computer screen all day in a daze. So you have too. Do you also feel the same?
Yeah, I feel like when the second was born, it was a very, very different ballgame. And I guess this is something we'll get onto later, but they were so different too. And I've probably said this before, but you think you've got it nailed with the first one. You think, oh, well, I know what children are. The second one comes along and doesn't react the same way, wants different things, has different needs. So while you're still reeling from the first, the second is exponential. It really, really is exponential. You're kind of feeling like you do have no space, brain bandwidth, emotional bandwidth. It's very difficult. I don't understand. I don't know how people with three or four, I've heard that it's not as big a jump. One to two is the biggest jump. Well, I think
what's the opposite of logarithmic? It's like it evens out. It's diminishing returns or something.
It's from there. It's sort of a very curved graph, but, I feel the same. You have all this time to yourself that you don't realize you have, and then bedtimes become the most sacred things in the world because you know that hour or half an hour you get afterwards, it's the only quiet time you're going to get. So it's I feel for you because that first year is not an easy one. That first year of having two. We managed it, I guess. For me, I was quite lucky because the second was very attached to their other parent, and it kind of left me with the eldest a lot. And I'd have to say, you know, he was a lot easier in that I could take him out for walks, and he was quite they're a lot more, like I've said before, they're a lot more interactive. I'm going to stop saying like I've said before because I think people realize that. They're a lot more interactive. And once the second and the first start interacting with each other properly, it's
then
difficult to... Yeah, well, I'd say bronzing. Golden takes a while. It takes a while. But yeah, you start getting a bit of respite because they start to entertain each other and you're like, okay, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Where you are now, you're in the depths, in the deep.
In the tunnel.
You're in the abyss. You're going to have a thing of water coming up and staring at you in the face. So, yeah. Anyway,
you know, she's how much older is your eldest?
18 months.
Oh, close. Wow. Oh, okay, yeah. That's really close. Yeah.
We did that on purpose. We wanted to get it all out of the way as quickly as possible.
Yeah. I don't know what's better, but
I don't
guess either. There's no, so mine is 3 years, a little bit over 3 years older than the second one. And the second one is now 6 months old. So I guess we're kind of halfway through the journey, because as you said, most people say the first year is really difficult, is the most difficult, and things start evening out. The situation we're in here in Finland, which I think I've talked about before, is that in France, you get daycare really from the beginning. Like, mothers get usually 3 to 4 months of... They usually take 3 to 4 months of maternity leave. Fathers take very little, which is, you know, not good at all, but that's how it is. In Finland, mothers get about a year. Most mothers will take about a year of time off, which means there is no infrastructure for daycare for children that are under really 9 months old. It just doesn't work. They don't have the... I mean, technically, they're obliged to take your child if you tell them you have to go back to work. I mean, daycare. But most of them don't have the infrastructure, and it's kind of not really regarded as something people do. You have to stay home for at least 9 months, I would say. So that's what we're doing with our daughter. And that's what we did with our son. But with our son, my wife has had to start working again after a few months. So we had to juggle the kid between the two of us with our full-time jobs and other issues I'll get to in a little bit. But here, she is in the Finnish system. There are a variety of different reasons, but she's in the Finnish system, so she does get maternity leave for the full duration. She's not loving it. She doesn't love maternity leave. As you said, like, the lack of interaction of babies is not super fun. But we're getting to, like, she's 6 months old now, and in January she'll be at daycare. And so we're kind of two-thirds through our journey of having her at home and being kind of dedicated to her all the time, at least for my wife. And the fact that we waited for 3 years before having the second one meant that the first one was starting to be more manageable. And we were getting kind of, we were starting to breathe. And just as we were starting to breathe, it was like... God, starting again with all the diapers and the, you know, digestion issues and all that BS.
Sorry, you're saying you planned 3 years. Did you actually plan that? Or was, because you, after the first one, I'm pretty sure you said no more, never again.
Yeah, I think after the first one, I knew that's the way I felt at the moment, but I knew there was a possibility because we discussed it and we said ideally we'd want two. Actually did plan, and we thought, you know, what's the longest we can wait so that the first one is more manageable, but they're still, they can still relate. And 3 years felt like a little bit too much, but, you know, still doable. And so it was planned. Not exactly specifically 3 years, but around that. I'm telling you, though, now we're done. We have had our two children. We have a boy and a girl. There is literally no reason to have a third one. None. And it is like both my wife and I agree. It is not happening. We're very happy with our adorable children. They will not have a little sister or brother. They'll have to entertain each other because they won't have another option. And that is actually definite.
It's funny, before the second was born, we had a sex scan done and found out that we were going to have a second boy, and we thought, well, okay, we're going to go on and have a third. sort of made that decision, and just like you, within 2-3 months we said, nope, nope, that's it, two boys. You know, because we both wanted to have a girl. I come from a family of all boys, and so we wanted to, but yeah, it was almost exactly the same thing. It was, no way, we're not having a third, and that's it. So
you know, it's funny, before our son was born, we thought it was like, it took us a significant amount of our like thinking about the child, whether it would be a boy or a girl, and it really mattered to us, and it was like something important. For the second one, turned out she's a girl, but it really didn't matter as much, you know? It felt like, well, you know, it's going to be another baby, and whatever he or she is, it's going to be great. And it turns out it's a girl, you know, that's nice. I think it's kind of fun to have both experiences, probably, but it doesn't, like, it's like a footnote. It doesn't really matter all that much. And that's a real change between the first and the second one.
Yeah. I think related to that, we're very similar in that with the first year, we took so many photos. Yeah, I know it's a meme, but we took so many photos. We made a first year of your life video.
Me too. Like the 1 second every day thing.
And, yeah, it wasn't 1 second every day, but it was, you know, it was something close. And we, you know, first birthday and pictures, and the second one, poor kid, he's got very little documented because we just couldn't be fucked. Sorry, but
as has been established, that's fine.
So yeah, it's a very different beast emotionally. You don't love them any less, definitely not. But yeah, the attention to detail, I think, disappears, and the worry over certain small things also goes.
You're not
suddenly, there's a cough in the middle of the night, or there's a sniffly nose. You'll get over it. You'll be fine.
The thing you asked is there blood? No? Okay, you're fine. And that applies to the first one as well, you know?
My kids are sick of me asking, do you need to go to the hospital? No? Fine, you're fine.
It's really, yeah, and the photos thing. I have to actively force myself and remind myself to take pictures of our daughter. And I do, you know, I take quite a few. But certainly not as much as with the first one. And I think that's normal. But I think what I have to do is take enough that it won't be weird that, you know, there aren't... If you don't count them, it's like, okay, my life is still documented, you know, week by week, month by month. And so you kind of fudge it and they can't tell the difference.
You'll thank yourself later if you do. I know it doesn't sound silly, but yeah, at least do something.
Yes, absolutely. So okay, this was the first thing I wanted to talk about, the difficulty of having two children. The second thing I really want to address is something that, again, people who have listened to the episodes before, the previous ones, will be familiar with, is the difficulty of having a difficult child. And with my son, it felt like my son was a difficult child. Not, you know, the worst child in history, but for the first year, like the first 6 months, he would cry nonstop. All the time. And we went to all the doctors, we saw everyone, and we tried everything, you know, the different foods, the massages, the everything. And all the doctors were telling us, oh, your son is in great shape. You're doing a great job. Keep going. And we were completely destroyed because he was crying all the time. And for, again, people who don't have children, if you're listening, if you're still listening, you have no idea what kind of torture a baby crying can become. Literally, you cannot know. I'm telling you, you're trying to internalize it, but you don't know. It is terrorism in the purest sense of the term. It induces terror. It's horrifying. And our son was crying all day, every day. Like, I'm barely exaggerating when I'm saying all day. It was multiple hours a day, and we didn't know why. And it got easier with, you know, in the first year and then second year, but he's still a really difficult child. Again, I think there are more difficult children. I've seen children that are very agitated, that run around all the time, that never stop. I often joke that my son is like the secret to infinite energy. You put 2 calories in and 15,000 come out. And the more tired he is, the more he's running around. And I know that's how children work. He is on the upper end of the activity chart. He's always running, always clapping his hands, always rolling around on the floor, always talking nonstop, not just talking a lot, nonstop, and talking really loud and throwing things around. And again, like when we tell him to stop, he usually stops, but he starts again. He's not like a crazy child that's completely uncontrollable, but he just has so much energy in him that he has to let it out. And to get his attention, you get his attention, and then he stops. He goes outside now in the other room to play stuff. But he is a really difficult child, and it induces stress on you, because anytime you spend time with him in the house, that's the other thing. And when we go out of the house, he's fine. He's occupied, he's busy, he's interested. When we're in the house, it's when the things become difficult. And when you're in the house, it is extremely stressful. Every minute spent with him, that's inaccurate, not every minute, but most of the time spent with him is stress-inducing. And you often have to restrain yourself to not scream at him to get his attention or to get him to stop something, which is either not, if I say annoying, it's not an accurate description of what it is. Like it's something that is driving you crazy or that is dangerous. And you can't restrain yourself all the time. Sometimes I slip and I yell at him. And then he kind of pays attention. And then he sometimes gets very sad because his dad screamed at him for no reason, which is not the kind of thing I want to do. But yeah, so I'm trying to paint a picture of the difficulty of that child. I don't know if that fits with a picture of one of your two children or if that sounds foreign.
I would say that's, I haven't had that experience to that extent. I wouldn't say. I think there were other issues, but not to the extent you're describing there. No.
So I have examples of children that are worse. So I don't. My description is making it seem like, or that seem worse. I don't know how it is at home. My description is making it seem like he's some kind of lunatic, which might be a little bit accurate, but he's still. You can manage him. It's just he's a lot of work. He requires a lot of work, attention, and dedication all the time you're spending with him. I think that's the best way to describe it. Need to be very focused on him, whether he's playing by himself or not, to make sure that you're channeling him into, either not being a. He's not even really a danger to himself. It's just not to not make him, let him go wild on your life, I guess. So that's my son. And the other side of that coin, and I don't know if they're related. I think they're probably not, or I don't know. Maybe they are. He was very early in everything he did. He started, he's not, genius. Some kind of child genius or anything like that, but he's just really early, like everything. He started crawling early. He started getting teeth early. He started walking early. He started talking early, very early. Like this summer, because of COVID, we hadn't met a lot of people and we don't have any point of reference, but this summer we went out and met people and he was in the bus, talked with the bus driver and everything. And everyone's telling us, even at the daycare and everywhere, everyone's telling us, he speaks really well. Like his speech ability is uncanny. Many people have told us he speaks like a six-year-old when he was 3.5 back in the summer. Like he speaks with a six, like a six-year-old. He makes, his vocabulary is very rich. He makes very complex sentences. He explains stuff like, and he's 3.5 and we tend to forget how little he is because he speaks so well, which might be contributing to his stress, which contributes to our stress. I'm not saying we're handling everything well, by the way. We might very well be making a lot of mistakes. I guess that's a lot of parents, but he's so the point is he's really early for a lot of that. He speaks Swedish exceedingly well. He speaks French pretty well. Again, that's not uncommon for children. I think at 3.5, it is uncommon. And all of that makes him like this child of ours. And then comes along our daughter. And our daughter is, for the first 2 months, I think I've mentioned it on the show maybe, and definitely on Twitter and elsewhere. So the first 2 months, I was kind of in the pit of despair because she had really bad digestion problems and she was crying all the time as well, like my son. And before she was born, we were like, okay, you know, first one had this weird thing. We never figured it out. We don't know what happened. But he's in great health. He's very, you know, happy. We say in French, épanoui. Like he's a happy kid. Like he's got no problem at all. But he had this really difficult aspect to him in his difficult first year. The second one, there's no reason to think that she would have this issue of crying all the time as well. It will be fine. First 2 months. Like the first 10 days are always easy because they don't even realize they're out of the womb. But after that, you have a switch that happens. And if things are difficult, they become really difficult and they cry a lot. And she started doing that. And I was, oh my God, I thought it was going to be everything the same again. And I thought I couldn't handle it. You know, it was like without kidding, even by today's standards, which I've been complaining about for, you know, my life today for the past half an hour, it seems like, or 3 hours, it seems like, it's easier than having one child back then, than having this in the first 6 months or year with that kid that was crying all the time. And I thought it was going to be the same. Long story short, thankfully, at about the 2.5 months, 3 months mark, her digestion got under control, and she started crying less, and then a lot less, and then only when she actually had like a wet diaper, or she was hungry, or she was crying, and that's where, or she was tired. That's where we're at now. She's not just a normal baby. She is, I think, an easy baby. Like, a very easy baby. She's happy hanging out on her playmat for like half an hour, sometimes more. She cries. She lets us know what's happening. When she has a wet diaper, she'll cry a little bit and we figure it out. When she's hungry, same thing. When she's tired, same thing. She smiles all the time. Like, when you show up and you look at her and you do a little smile, she will give you the biggest grin you can imagine and genuine rays of joy and happiness will emanate from her face. And she looks at you and you know that you're the cause for this happiness. It is magical. Like, and this is what the experience of taking care of her feels like on the, you know, moment-to-moment basis. It's still having to take care of a baby that does nothing but, you know, literally shit and eat. And that can be taxing intellectually for some people who aren't built for it. I think neither my wife or I are built for it. But the general, like, attitude of that child is so the polar opposite of our son. It is crazy. It's uncanny. And of course, it might change. You know, she's only now 6 months old. Maybe it's going to change down the line and it's going to get more difficult. But at this point, I kind of have two competing feelings in my head again. Very different from the first ones I described. First, it kind of confirms that our son, which we had, again, no point of reference for to evaluate whether he was easy or hard, we had a feeling, obviously, that he was a difficult child, but in some ways, he's very easy in other ways, but in those ways, he was hard, but we didn't really know. Now, we have an easy child, and we know what it is. And so it's the confirmation that we're not crazy, kind of. Our son is indeed, you know, on the difficult end of the children difficulty scale. And that's like kind of reassuring in a way. We're like, okay, we're not insane. We're not horrible parents that didn't, or maybe we are because we didn't manage to channel him properly or something. And so that's the first thing. We're not insane. He is more difficult than average children. The other thing is, now that we know what an easy child is like, and again, even today, there are moments where it's difficult, you know? There are those moments where she wakes up in the night and you're tired and it's the second time or third time that something wakes you up and you're exhausted and you have to feed her, but you don't want to feed her because she shouldn't be eating at night anymore. She's big enough. But still, everyone's crying. The little one woke up, and now he woke up the other one. And so there are moments that are difficult. But my message there is not, it's not a message. It's a realization of a truth I suspected. Everyone says, oh, yeah, children are difficult. And some people say, oh, yeah, you know, children are difficult, but, you know, it's also so much joy and you have some difficult moments, but I really love being a parent. And or maybe I shouldn't get the loving being a parent into this discussion because maybe it's a different conversation. But you have a lot of people who say, yeah, it's difficult, but, you know, it's so much joy and so much. It's great. Those people, they got the easy children. I can, like, I do not want to hear anyone answering someone who says, I fucking hate having children in a burst of, you know, of frustration release. I don't want anyone to hear anyone saying, oh, yeah, you know, it is difficult. Because if that's what your reaction is, you have no idea what that person went through. Honestly, it is incomparable. And I've spoken to a lot of people who have had really hard experiences with their difficult children. And I've spoken to a lot of people who are in that like mellow, it's difficult, but you know, you make an effort. And I'm sure those people also have the waking up at night and the, but there's like, it's like the people who never had children, you realize what having children is when you have one. It's the same thing with easy and difficult children. You don't know what a difficult child does unless you've had one. And that's, you know, now I have both experiences. And I adore both for, you know, different reasons, many reasons, all the reasons. But it's not the same.
No, I'd agree with you there. And I think one of the things that's just human nature is that we're all judging ourselves and each other. And it becomes a competition to be, you know, who's got the most difficult child? Who's got the most gifted child? Who's got the, you know, my child was walking at 10 months. You know, my eldest was walking at 10 months. Well, look at me. I'm an amazing parent.
Hey, Bruce.
The simple.
My son was walking at 9 months.
9 months and 32 days, I bet.
One thing I forgot to say, my daughter seems to be either on the normal end of things or a little bit late in her, you know, those kind of things. And, you know, it's not, I
apparently
love them both.
That's okay. That happens with the second.
Oh, really? Because you take care of them less.
Well, I don't know why. Maybe they. I don't know. Yeah. I could be completely wrong, but that's what we were told. Although, in saying that, there's lots of myths about parenting out there.
Yeah.
And it just strikes me at how, when you're talking about it, it hits a nerve with me, because I think for the first one we had him, it was quite easy to begin with. Baby, and he was always quite happy just to sit and play by himself, and was very softly spoken, and very, very lovely, happy child. He's got issues now at school. He's only in half a day most days, and we're getting assessments made, and it's not the most difficult thing in the world. He's not. I don't think at a level that's going to be super challenging, but with words like autism and ADHD are being thrown around, and that's fine. And he's quite high functioning, so it's fine. But there are moments when things happen. So while it was easy at one stage, he's turning 9 in a couple of months. So he's been at school now he's in year 4, I think. And his brother's in year 2 or 3, as a year below. But it's a very different experience. And it was very funny when the eldest first went to school. There was an assumption at the school, or I feel like there was an assumption that, you know what, maybe it's the parents, maybe we're doing things wrong, and that's why he's behaving the way he is. And it was only when our second went to school and they saw how sort of normal he was, at least in it, when it came to interacting with other kids and not needing things to be in a certain way, that they realized, oh, hold on, maybe it's not the parents. And I think we need to look at ourselves and realize exactly what you're saying there. It's like, children are different. Your first child, I'm not going to pull punches, sounds like it was a complete fucking nightmare, and it really does. And I feel for you. And even the first 2 months of the second one, genuinely worried for you. I think you disappeared off the planet, and anytime we did hear contact from you, it's not that we're not close buddies or anything, but anytime we did hear from you, you were like, you it sounded like you wanted to murder anyone you spoke to. So
a little bit, yeah. And again, I'll give context in this, and fully admitting that I'm aware that I'm not built to be a parent. And I'm sure some people cope with this and deal with it a lot better than I do. But yeah, when she was crying, and there was baked in the fear that it would be like it was with the first one. So yeah, it was, yeah.
I wonder though, if your admission that you're not built to be a parent makes you a better parent, because you're willing to learn.
The thing that reassures me, and the only thing that kind of reassures me, to be honest, is that I have to mention before I also say the other thing, they're both incredibly healthy. That is, I think, something that I can't forget. Like when I think of people with real problems, with real health issues, with children, which are so plunge you in the depths of real despair, and that I'm fully aware that this is the real, the real challenge with a baby or a child, of course. So I'm completely aware of this. And I thank, if the Lord exists, I thank him every day that my children are extremely healthy. And that is, again, very aware of this. But so the only reason I think I've started thinking recently where maybe all of our worry and stress is we are doing okay, is that whenever a nurse or a doctor or a teacher or anyone sees my son and now sees my daughter, they say, wow, they seem extremely happy. Like they're perfectly adjusted, very happy, very healthy. They're some of the healthy, like best adjusted children we've seen, you have nothing to worry about. And so, of course, you know, that's, I'm sure in those situations, that's what you say when the kid is not in danger, and you're like, okay, it's fine, no problem, because that's your job at the healthcare facility to see if the kid is in some situation that might be a hazard for them. But it's still, you know, it's like, okay, well, phew, okay, the professionals are telling us they're doing good, and so we're. That's like, but other than that, and before now, I'm starting to relax a little bit about this. But before that, I was certain I was doing a horrible job as a father, like that I wasn't handling things properly, that he was being, I don't want to say mistreated because that's not an accurate term, but like. I felt incredibly guilty when I mismanaged any situation, or now it's a little bit better. I still feel guilty all the time, but a little bit less.
The self-doubt that comes with being a parent is real. it's real. And I think you're definitely explaining that. You second guess everything. And I'm like you. I have to remind myself, are they healthy? Yes. Are they happy? You know, yes. Are they decent human beings? That's starting to become a thing now.
Yeah.
Yes.
I worry about that so much, by the way.
You know what? For me, we have one rule in our house. It's basically, essentially, just be kind. But the rule is don't be a dick. That's it. That's it. You know, that's all it is just be kind to each other. And that's all that I could ever hope for with my kids. And I'm lucky in that academically, both my boys, even though, you know, eldest is in only half a day, academically, he's well ahead of everyone else. You can't really be everything to your child all the time. You're going to have to admit that, okay, they've got some failings. It's not your fault. And if it is your fault, well, it's not like every human in this planet had a perfect parent. You know, I can look at what my parents did and say, oh, well, you know, they did this wrong, they did that wrong. I've got all sorts of issues now that I can relate back to my childhood or not. But we're not expected to be perfect, although I think everyone thinks that we should
be. I think that the children growing up and possibly until they have children of their own are resentful of some things that their parents were, not even did, but were. And I think when you have children, after a while, you realize everyone does the best they can. You know, that's, you'll do what you can and without breaking and you know, you bend yourself to the limit of your ability without breaking yourself, and you do the best you can, and hopefully that's enough or that's good. Hopefully it's not bad, but the you know, yeah, I guess everyone does the best they can is the realization.
And I think one of the things that you realize as they get older is you have increasingly less control, and as they develop into being the people they are, your son's going to come home and run around and be a lunatic. You can't chain him to the furniture or anything. That's just who
he tried. The authorities told us we weren't authorized to do that, unfortunately.
Lock him in a padded room, but you can't do that. And I think there'll be things as both of them grow up, I know for certain that's happened with me, that they get ideas in their head and you've got to let them run with it. You've got to sort of say, okay, this is with you now, and the responsibility of being a human being is with you, because you are a human being. And yes, I can guide you and give you advice and try to make your life easier. Although in saying that, I think the fact that we're doing this podcast, and I think everyone who has come on this podcast is very, I wouldn't say unique, but there's a lot of parents in this world who don't care, Patrick. There's a lot of parents in this world who will kick their children out as soon as they turn 18.
Oh, I'm doing that too. Little interest. Like you go do your military service and then you get an apartment. I don't want to hear, you know.
That's the thing in Finland. But you know, I always joke about it because we live pretty much in a farm, but well, no, not near a farm. And I keep joking that they're old enough now to go out and plow the fields and make some money. But I don't mean it. I think there's a lot of parents out there who just want the kids to go away. And there's a certain amount of compassion that's required. And there are bad parents out there. There definitely are bad parents out there. And I wouldn't say anyone who's a parent who's come onto this podcast are, because they're willing to talk about it and delve into the dark side of it. So yeah, you know, children are people. So they're different. You've got a brother, don't you?
I do.
You're not the same as him, I imagine.
we are extremely different in every possible way. Yes.
And you've got to remember that with your kids. They're not going to be the same. They're different human beings. They're little human beings. They're helpless a lot of the time, but they're still human beings. So
it's funny. There's daycare. He's big enough now that he has friends, and there are enough children there now. We live in a very small village, so the past years there weren't a lot of children at daycare, but now there's like competition and jealousy and like there's one that throws sands at people and one that doesn't want to play with the others, and you know, and all of those little problems which are going to turn into bigger problems as he grows older. It's worrisome and cute and and at the same time, you know, when you're saying I want them to grow into decent human beings, it's like, so wait a second, like this kid threw sand at you, but like, did you say something before? And he was like, oh yeah, I teased him before. And I was like, we told you don't tease. Like, oh, but the other kid was teasing someone as well. And I'm like, okay, but you know, you shouldn't. Like, how do you feel when people tease you? And he's like, I don't like it. And you're like, well, maybe the other, you know, and all of those things. And you're like,
yeah,
but what if he turns out to be like a bad person? Like, not,
yeah,
you know, like, I mean, they're children, they're mean. That's how you learn empathy, by being mean and seeing what happens and what happens when it's done to you. I understand that, but it's funny. I want to end with a story of what's been happening in the past couple of months with the big one, especially with my son. But I'll let you say your piece before we close things off.
I think it's a journey, and everyone's journey is different. My boys are developing into human beings, and I hope they turn out okay. I'm doing the best I can to direct them in the way they need to go. Is it difficult? My God, it is. it's super difficult, because even now, I had to wait, tell you to wait a bit, because there was a dispute just before you started the podcast, because they're on a 2-week holiday. It's called the Tatty Holidays here in Scotland. It's traditionally a time where they used to go out and pick potatoes, I think. So there's a very strange 2-week holiday in the middle of October here, and they're off school. So finding things for them to do with the weather here, and they start fighting with each other because this person wants to use that, and the other one wants to use that, and you know, mediating and thinking, well, who's in the right? Yeah, well, actually, you're both being idiots, or actually, you know, it's difficult, because sometimes you have to make a decision and make it look like, hold on, you're not, you know, favoring one or the other, and you've got two people here who've it's the job changes very much. You start becoming a father and a parent and an actual human being to them, and you can discuss and reason, and that to me is much easier. For me, that's the easier part of the job. I recall the babies as being wonderful. I love kids. I love babies. I think they're, you know, they're great things. Not when they're crying. Not when you need to wipe their butts. Not when you know they throw up on you and all that. But as they grow up, the people they develop and blossom into is just, I think that's the most amazing journey. It's got its bumps, it's got its speed traps, it's got its spiked pits that you fall into every now and then. And I hope it's going to be all worth it. I hope they're going to end up being good kids, but or good people, but we don't know. And
let's hope they take care of you when you're old and you can't take care of yourself. That's what we're doing it, right? The ultimate investment.
That's it. When like I said, when they're 18, they need to be out and they need to be paying. You know, I've got 18 years worth of bills that I want them to pay back. Yeah.
Listen, that's the thing. That's the ultimate paying it forward, right? You pay for your children, so they pay for their children, etc. But taking care of you, like coming to see you in the retirement home, that's like the thing you can hope for, I guess. There's one step in that wonderful journey you're mentioning that I want to talk about for just a second. My son is, I was saying, you know, there are incredible things and things that have us scratching our heads a little bit. He is very scared of many things. He's scared mostly of things that make a buzzing sound. That includes, of course, machines, any kind of machine that buzzes, he's scared of. He's not a big fan of the shower, which makes a lot of sound. He's actually not a big fan of the bath, which is, that is one of the things that... So let me back up a little bit. The reason I'm saying it's stressful all the time about everything is the constant fighting to get them to do things they should do. You know, it's freezing temperatures outside. You should put on a sweater. He will cry and scream and run away and cry as you're forcing the sweater on him. Like, not forcing, that's not true, but finally you get him to stand in front of you crying, like you're like destroying his favorite cuddly toy. The bath is kind of the same. He never wants to take a bath and never wants even more to wash his hair. Like, he will fight you about washing the hair every single time. And most of the time, as you're doing it, he will cry. Like, what do you do? Like, you can't not wash his hair, cleaning his ears. If you're listening to this in a few years, I love you very much. The cleaning of the ears, my darling, that is a nightmare because you never want to do it. You keep moving. You cry and run away. What do we do? Like, do we leave the ears clogged like they're a pipe that hasn't been used in for 50 years? So anyway, those are things that you have to do. And no matter how many times you do them, it will still be drama and difficulty and stressful to do them every day. And you have to do them every day. And so you know that when they come back from daycare, it's going to be that fight all over again. And that's why it's so stress-inducing. Maybe that's a better explanation than I don't know if it's good, but maybe it's better than the one I gave before.
I think you're not alone in that. At least I've had experience in that with both my kids. Eldest in particular, if he meets anyone with red on their face, he goes, even now, he goes absolutely insane. He hates it.
Really?
And yeah, and there was the same issue with washing his hair. Same issue, just did not want it, did not like it. And it was like I was trying to murder him every time we did it. It's a struggle, and I don't know how kids get things in their heads. And my youngest one will not leave the house without putting everything on exactly. It doesn't matter what the temperature, he'll put hat and gloves and scarf and da, 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 and he won't want to leave the house until all of that is done. So if you're in a hurry, well, you're screwed. Whereas the eldest, the eldest, he won't put anything on, and he was very much like that when he was younger. And now he just runs out the house without anything and then complains that he's too cold 10 minutes later. You know, but yeah, so I hear you there. There are idiosyncrasies, and it sounds like you've got your eldest boy is going to be
one of those. Like
he's got his ways, and I think it's going to be fun for you. Yeah.
So a couple of weeks ago, we started baby swimming lessons every Saturday morning. We've done it twice. We go to the swimming pool with both children, and we go learn to swim, which is really, you know, just carrying them in the water and making them familiarize them with the water. And so before you get into the swimming pool area, you have to take a shower. And I see all the children around us who take showers or who are in their parents' arms and go under the shower and are washed. My son, the first time, screams and cries. I had to physically grab him, catch him, and bring him on me under the shower because I couldn't, you know, just go out and not go under the shower, of course. And all the other children are fine. We go out of the swimming pool and we talk about it, and of the pool hole, and we talk about it, and he says, you know, yeah, I'm gonna take a shower next time. I'm gonna be really good, and like I'm not scared anymore. Okay, great. And then of course this is the next time we go in and cries and like horror. Like it's not, you know, it's not just that he's crying because he's sad. I understand that he's actually terrified. I don't know why. And I understand that it's suffering when he's actually suffering when I force him under the shower. He's terrified of it. I don't understand. But you can't not take a shower ever. So that is a part that is really difficult. And, you know, maybe there will be things like conditions that will be discovered later. For now, he's too young for that kind of thing. And he's so well adjusted in other ways that I don't know. But that being said, we then go into the shower and into the pool. And he's never been actually inside a body of water. We've gone to the beach a few times and he would, you know, run around in the water with water up to his knees, but that's it. And so we go into the pool and he's a little bit scared. And I take his hand and I'm like, okay, do you want to go in? And he's like, can you carry me, Dad? And I carry him and I go in and he's a bit scared. So he grabs on really tight and he's hugging me. And at first he's really nervous and there are things he doesn't want to do. You know, he doesn't want me to hold him in this way or that way, but he's just hugging me and I'm the comfort and the security for him, which, by the way, anytime he cries, including if I make him cry, he comes to me for comfort, which is very reassuring, as you know, for the relationship between the parents and the children. Like he always knows that we are the safe place, even when we're the ones that make him scared or, you know, something happens. But so he's cuddling me really close. And that is such a warming feeling. And then he gets relaxed a little bit and paddles around in the water, always with me, you know, holding him. And he has fun. And then we go out of the pool and he's so happy that we went to the swimming lessons and he wants to go again. And he can't wait for Saturday when we'll go again. And that is such a, you know, it's one of these things that make up the other part of the relationship and of the condition of being a father and a parent, which, again, I don't talk about as much because the frustration is overpowering. But is equally important, you know, the part where the infinite adoration part of that title, and it's indescribable, you know, it's the fact that he thinks of me as something that is safe, and I'm the solution to his sadness, and the thing that I'm the person that he wants to witness his joy, and you know, it's incredible. And that's something that has started, I would say, about a year ago, even mm-hmm. maybe more recently. Until they're 2 years old, they're not, you know, they're still, they're not the little, you know, chews anymore that eat and poop, but it's still very basic. Now he's developing emotions and that are, that strengthen the bond between the parents and the children, that are in a way that I think even I didn't, it's not that I didn't expect it, it's that this is what I expected before I had a child, and there was this 3-year hiatus or interval when it was absolutely not what was on the box. It was like, this is not what I was sold on. And now we're getting back to that wonderful picturesque image of what a child is in some ways. And I thought it was maybe important to mention it as well, because it's very genuine and very true.
I think that's a good way of putting it, because once they do get to that age and they start getting more and more, I think that's possibly some of the best times of being a parent between 3 and 4, mm-hmm. In that they just absolutely adore you. And I mean, it stays,
it won't last, it stays, I'm sure,
for me. No, well, my boys are still the same. They're very, you know, very huggy, cuddly boys, which is great. But I'm waiting for apparently the teenage years, which are going to be, where they start to hate us. This is apparently happens to all kids. So there'll probably be parents of teenagers out there who are going to be listening to this and chuckling away and saying, you don't know what's to come. And we don't.
Guess we do. Everyone talks about it. And I think that's the kind of thing that you're old enough to remember. Like, finding your parents at the very least mildly annoying is the best version of it. Hopefully you raise them well enough and their personality is adapted to the idea that they'll just be a little bit embarrassed by you, but not actively despise you, I guess.
I do wonder how much control we have, though, ultimately, in the end. We'll see. I guess we'll wait and see. It's like I was saying with my brothers, I'm completely different from my, you know, my other brothers, and we had the same parents, so we should all be the same, shouldn't we? But no, we're not.
I think one aspect of it, which I'm starting to see now that I didn't see before, is when they become teenagers and they're even more independent. Of course, there are new worries, like, you know, what's happening at school and the friends, mm-hmm. are they being bullied? Are they, you know, having heartache, and you can't do anything, it has to pass. And it's really heart-wrenching, I'm sure, in some ways. And they don't want your advice and they don't listen. They do the opposite of what you tell them to do. All mm-hmm. those things are certainly true and certainly, you know, a genuine worry and problem. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you've just spent 10 years of your life mostly focused on raising that human, mm-hmm. and they're getting a little bit more independent and you're getting a little bit of your life back. And I can't imagine that doesn't bring its share of satisfaction as well. Like, you do everything you can, you do a good job as a parent, but also you're a person again. And hopefully it starts a little bit earlier. But I can imagine now that, you know, parents of teenagers are concerned for the welfare of their kids and all that. But also, they're people as well. And I think that might play into it a little bit more than we imagine when we are ourselves children or when we think of the children. And that's something that maybe you only see when you're a parent yourself and you think of those things which don't jump out at you when you're not. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. And I go back to what you were asking earlier, right at the beginning, is does it get easier? And I think the honest answer is yes, it does. It does get easier because you've got less of that weight on you. You're always going to love them the same way. You're always going to want to protect them the same way, but they will become human beings and they will become people. And when they leave the house, if we look at other parents who have wonderful kids and they have wonderful lives, and I don't think that's something that we should think is impossible.
Yeah.
People come through all sorts of adversity.
And honestly, in my case, at least, like, there are concerns, but there's no adversity. Like, they won the life lottery on the world scale. You know, they're growing up in a family that is very well off, in a country that is very well off. I wouldn't say there's any kind of adversity for them. Everyone has their problems, of course, but
we all have our own mountains to climb. I think, of course, what my mom always said to me. So, and our mountains look as big as everyone else's to ourselves.
That's true. I would never deny that.
Your son is definitely your son, because you were saying they talk for ages and don't stop. Whereas before we started, you said you wanted to keep this to 40 minutes. I don't know where we are now, but
almost twice as long.
So I guess twice as long, but
we'll end the show here. I think it's a good snapshot of where we are at this stage. And I'm looking forward to hopefully making other Tales of Fatherhood as things change in the future.
I'm interested to hear how Turkey's getting on.
I want to hear that too. He was unfortunately busy. We're doing this in the middle of the day. Because Martin, his daughter, is a little bit older, so I don't think since, you know, less than a year, things haven't changed significantly. But Turkey's kid is... What is he, a year now? A year and a half, maybe? Not even. So he was having a really hard time, as I was. You know, he's kind of the mirror of my experience. So I'm very interested in knowing how it's going. And maybe for Tales of Fatherhood 4, we'll have a return of Turkey, at least.
Maybe we should have somebody who's gone beyond everything sit back and laugh at us. I don't know, maybe.
A parent of multiple children that are out of the house. I'm sure we'll find that. It will be an interesting twist as well. All right, thank you so much. I was going to say Kerwin again.
My name is Bruce McKerwin. Lots of people know me by that. Anyway.
Thanks so much, Bruce. Are you somewhere on the internet for people to find you?
Yes, I'm on. I'm on Twitter, and I'm sure it'll be in the show notes. I'm also, I'll say it. I'm a patron of the Phileas Club, and I only say it because I think if you're listening to this now, it's worth sending a couple of bucks Patrick's way. He's obviously in a very bad situation, and he needs the money.
You know,
you just spoiled it before by saying.
Yes, exactly. I will take the money. Absolutely. I think it's, if you enjoy the show and if you appreciate the show, I think definitely. It is worth the money. I am not in a bad situation where I need the money. That I cannot pretend.
We all need the money, Patrick. We've all got
I'll take it. I think, honestly, I would like to hire a nanny. The problem is, as I was saying, there's no infrastructure here. For that. Yeah. So even if we could, which maybe we can, I don't even know how much it would cost, but
that's a whole other discussion. Childcare and being able to afford it is a huge issue.
But here it is because parental leave are so generous, which ironically makes it difficult to not take care of your children for at the very minimum a year, full time. Anyway, whole other discussion. Thank you so much for yep. directing people to the Patreon, patreon.com/thePhileas Club. It is in the show notes. So if you appreciate what we do, again, I will take your money and thank you profusely for it. So thanks to yep. all of those who already do it. Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate
and if you, your cash. If you're listening without giving money, we will hunt you down.
I will let no, Bruce no, raise no, his no. children to do that. It's fine yeah, as well sorry. For me. For me, it's not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everything. I do shows in French about tech and gaming. You can find everything that I do at notpatrick.com. And hopefully we'll be back with another episode very soon. Thank you so much for listening. And talk to you then. Bye.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.